I am amazed at how the human brain and the computer, as they work hand in hand, continue to come up with a kind of technology to do some of the things we're going to talk about tonight. I mean, it's at a point now where one thing I wanted to ask you is, as bizarre as it might sound, is with us into nanotechnology, which are building things that are so minute and small, how can they even see what they're making? I mean, how do they do this?
Well, I'll think of chemistry. I mean, I spent many years in chemistry as a pathway to get to material science, and in chemistry, up until very recently, it was all done using equations. I mean, you couldn't really see anything. You had to work out the details of the physics of the reaction, the molar weights, the Aggravata's constant, and all that kind of stuff to say, aha, here's what the next molecule is going to look like. So in a way, we've been trained to do this, to work in a virtual realm where experiment matches theory, and now we just take it to a new level where we can actually see what we're doing. But one thing I want to point out, since you mentioned RFID tags, and this is an area that I spend a lot of time in myself personally, I just got back from giving a lecture to Lockheed Martin about this very topic, ubiquitous computing and sort of tying everything together in a contiguous fitting framework. But there's a company out here called Nanoplex. They've kind of made a lot of news recently. They actually create now what you might call nano barcodes. These are molecular scale barcodes using what's called periodic nanostructures, which are much, much, much smaller than an RFID tag. You really can't see these things at all. But these things can be sprinkled in like dust into any kind of material, including, by the way, drugs and other medically sensitive materials, but also things that might require tracking and tracing, like, say, explosives or other, you know, sensitive materials that require to have some kind of a barcoding scheme that goes down to the molecular scale. So this actually exists as a product as we speak.
What is it made with?
Well, not to go into a technical detailed lecture, but the basic concept is this, that one can create what's called a sacrificial mold. That is a mold with narrow channels or holes in it. Then you simply sputter in or layer in successive layers of the materials of choice. And this can be quite a range of materials, actually, but it depends on what you want. Do you want optically selective materials? Do you want materials that will absorb versus reflect certain wavelengths of light? Or do you want other aspects of keying where you can scan with different frequencies of energy and get some kind of response? The whole point is that once you've layered in these materials, you chemically remove the sacrificial mold, and what you're left behind with are these vertical channels with these structured nanomaterials. And in fact, there's another company here called Nanosys, which is very famous now. In fact, they're going to be doing an IPO before too long, or if that's what they say. And they're also absolutely commercializing this whole idea of periodic nanostructures for a wide variety of applications, including barcoding, perhaps.
It just happens at such an incredible pace now, and it's just very difficult for the human mind to comprehend something like this.
Well, as I've often said, in fact, when we get to this discussion, perhaps, about what I call the convergence syndrome, this is exactly what's happening. We are reaching a kind of an evolutionary event horizon, as I often say, where the scale, complexity, and velocity of knowledge far exceeds human capacity to render mission-critical decisions into ever shorter timescales. And this is exactly why, by the way, things like evolutionary computing and biological metaphors in computing are suddenly becoming the topic du jour of many different interests, because we know that the complexity is exceeding human capacity. And in order to even look at how certain epicenters of knowledge can be clustered together for different kinds of referencing, we're relying on a new kind of artificial intelligence. I wouldn't even call it artificial intelligence exactly. I would refer to it more like synthetic sentience. And I'd be happy to explain that in more detail.
Really,
but the basic concept is that whether your focus is military planning, financial forecasting, weather analysis, I mean, it goes into a very, very wide range of categories of diverse information, or what you call informatics. Or what makes this possible is to become ever closer to actually mimicking biology as a process and as a system.
So you had mentioned that the mold is grown in with the material that you might want to use. Do they always have to use something that is alive in nanotechnology?
Oh, no, heavens no. And I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to suggest that in periodic nanostructures they're using organic materials, although in some cases they do.
Right.
But there are other examples where organic is used. In fact, let me give you a couple of examples.
Okay.
I chair a conference that happens twice a year, this Nanophotonics Electronics Forum conference. And so in the most recent one, which is just last month, a company called Cambrios, which actually made a lot of news recently. It was originally called Senzyme, and this was founded by a very remarkable woman named Angela Belcher, and she actually came out of Texas A&M, later IT. And her sort of claim to fame, or what she's most well known for, the utilization of viruses, or, you know, live viral entities, to essentially manipulate bits of metal on a very tiny scale, on a microscopic scale, as a way to replace much more complex and expensive fabrication techniques that are currently used to manufacture electronic circuits.